Hello, and welcome to Diabetes Dialogue, Therapeutics, Technology, and Real-World Perspectives. Diabetes Dialogue is a monthly podcast hosted by myself, Diana Isaacs, and Natalie Bellini, providing a regular news roundup of the latest clinically applicable insights across diabetes and metabolic diseases, with a focus on leveraging technology to improve care. Produced by EndocrinologyNetwork.com, the audio version of Diabetes Dialogue, Therapeutics, Technology, and Real-World Perspectives is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, with a video version available only on EndocrinologyNetwork.com.
Welcome to this edition of Diabetes Dialogue. My name is Diana Isaacs, and I'm with Natalie Bellini. And we have a great episode today where we'd like to talk about a new study of DIY looping, which was in New England Journal of Medicine. We also want to talk about a new automated insulin delivery consensus report that was just published. And then we'd like to banter a little bit about mobile apps. Natalie and I are also both attending EASD this week virtually. So we're in the midst of the conference. So we're going to plan to talk about all that we see the next edition, which will be coming soon. But let's go ahead and dive right into what we're discussing today. So Natalie, can you give us a little bit of background about this new article that was published in New England Journal of Medicine on DIY looping?
Hi, thanks for having us today and joining us in our discussion. So this new article in JAMA that was published, it was a multi-center open label randomized control trial. And that's a really big deal coming from where these people came from, right? This whole DIY came from a patient. And I think that we all have to appreciate and respect where DIY came from. It didn't come from clinicians. It came from actually a group of patients who were engineers or spouses or parents of children with diabetes that happened to be engineers that did this. So it was a trial that involved 97 total patients, and some of the patients used DIY systems, and then the other patients used sensor-augmented pump therapy. So just so you understand, sensor-augmented pump therapy are pumps that suspend but don't actually give additional insulin, so they're either on or off, whereas DIY is a completely automated delivery system where the basal rate is adjusted and goes up and down based on the predictive value of that glucose, that continuous sensor glucose.
Yeah, so the study was really impressive in that it showed how time in range was improved with this DIY system. And the fact that they did a randomized control trial, which is really the highest level of evidence, is I also think really impressive. Of course, we don't, unfortunately, it's not head-to-head with other AID systems. So we don't have, you know, the direct comparison to Omnipod 5 or Tandem Control IQ. And even though, yes, we could compare time and range between trials, it's different populations, it's different conditions. But I think it's exciting that they were able to show this kind of evidence, and I am all about patient choice. And even though, yeah, we have more AID systems now, we have three in the United States, with Medtronic being the third, but still, it just doesn't fit everyone. The targets are more rigid, even though Omnipod 5, for example, now we can take the target down to 110, which is nice. It's still, some people want lower targets, or they want more customization around mealtime. And that's one of the things that the DIY looping has been able to do. So I think there's still an argument that there are certain groups of people that want to continue this versus going to the FDA approved systems. And Natalie, I'm kind of curious how you handle this in practice if someone says, I want to do the DIY looping.
So we are a very liberal practice when it comes to DIY. We actually encourage it. And there are clinicians who will debate us forever and always about this. But we feel like we hand a patient a vial of 1,000 units of insulin, or we hand them a pen with 300 units of insulin in it, and we can't trust them to make their own decisions. We are trusting them. So we actually open up the LoopDocs page and show them an example of what it does, what it takes to build a DIY system, right? There's several different, you can use looping, which is the Apple version. There is also an Android version, right? So, and we just go through and say, this is what it looks like. This is up to you. We will help you if you decide to do this. We don't actually do the programming for the patient, but we will make suggestions once we see what the patient is doing. So we're pretty big proponents of it. Patients like it. They like to control and be able to set a lower target. And it brings up another whole point of, is time and tighter target important? You know, we know it's important for patients that are pregnant, for example, where the goal of time and range is actually 63 to 140 milligrams per deciliter. And we want patients there at least 70% of the time. So what patients have said to us is, so if that's what you really want for a patient who's pregnant, why wouldn't I do that all the time? Why wouldn't I set those goals for myself? And I think that's where this whole DIY looping comes about, is you can be more aggressive than you can be with the commercially available systems.
Yeah, those are great points. And I'll say in our practice, we're careful not to, we're definitely not going to start the systems like you said. We try to be careful just because of it not being FDA approved. But then if someone comes to us and they're using it, we are going to support them with their diabetes. And in fact, we'll still help them make adjustments to their pump, for example. And I think this is an area of confusion for some clinicians, like, well, how in the world do you adjust the DIY pump? And it is different because there's more customization, but a lot of the principles are similar in terms of, are you going to make a correction factor, or are you going to make it more aggressive or less aggressive? Same thing with the carbohydrate ratio. Are you going to adjust the insulin action time? So there are a lot of the principles that are similar, so clinicians can still be involved in supporting patients to make those adjustments to really optimize the algorithm.
Exactly.
And kind of, yeah, so kind of along those lines, I wanted to share a new AID consensus report that I had the great, great honor of being a part of with really an amazing group of authors. Led by Moshe Philip and Revital Nimri out of Israel, actually. And it's called Consensus Recommendations for Use of Automated Insulin Delivery Technologies in Clinical Practice. It was published in Endocrine Reviews.
So what's unique about this is that it's really designed to be practical. And so it starts off, it evaluates the current systems, both available in the United States and outside of the US, because this was actually a global working group. It summarizes the current evidence and everything, but then it talks about the psychological issues and perspectives from people with diabetes about what's important with device selection. It talks about data interpretation, how it's reported, how it's presented, and clinical recommendations regarding that. But also the section I was especially involved in working on is education, training, and support. And this section was led by Laurel Messer, and really talking about what things are important to the person with diabetes in terms of being able to support them. Also understanding what components do you adjust with each system. And Natalie and I know we talk about this a lot, because there's a lot of confusion about, well, what do you actually adjust to be meaningful for the system? And all the time we see people adjusting basal rates in like an Omnipod 5 or a Medtronic pump. And what does that do? It doesn't do much. Unfortunately, when the algorithm's running, when someone's in the automated mode of these systems, it's not for those two algorithms, it's not working off of it. So what that means is you really haven't done anything to affect their algorithm. Now, if they get kicked out or they stop using the automated mode for whatever reason, it is still important to look at what their total daily dose is and what that basal is and make sure it's similar. But making these little adjustments, these 10% up or down, isn't going to make a difference. Now, with some pumps, like with a Tandem Control IQ, it does work off of the basal with the algorithm. So adjusting the basal with that system will make a difference. But these are nuances where if you're not working with these systems every day, or you're just newer to learning about them, how would you know these things, right? So we hope that will be useful for people to really understand the ins and outs of the systems.
And I think we need to, as clinicians, just bringing up that whole education and training and support of the patient, that's really important to say to the patient, your total daily dose on this Omnipod 5 or Medtronic system is this, but your basal is this. So we're going to increase it across the board to make it closer to match, so that if you're out of your active mode or you reset it, that we're back to where we need to be, right? As opposed to we're changing this because we think it's going to improve your day tomorrow. It's not, right? Because if we also present something to a patient that isn't going to help, now we look at that psychological of your patient doesn't feel inspired or even understanding what their diabetes and their, it just makes it, you know, you're going to this whirlwind, right? So when you feel confident in saying, this is the change I think we should make, and this is why, how do you feel about that? You're supporting them both psychologically, but also in your own background knowledge of making a clinical decision that will help them, you know? And I think it's really important.
Yeah, I completely agree. And also in this consensus, like part of the education and training section talks about expectations. So none of these systems are curing diabetes. They are the best we have in terms of being able to increase time in range, but people are still going to have some hypoglycemia. They're not perfect. And then also expectations around, well, you still have to bolus, like in fact, you still have to pre-bolus. And so there's still a lot of work that we're asking a person with diabetes to do. And then also certain things like treatment of hypoglycemia is often different. We've like forever been like rule of 15, 15 grams of fast acting carbs. Well, it turns out with these systems, 15 grams is often too much. So now we're changing it. And often 5 or 10 grams, or you look at the arrow because the system's suspending insulin. So if you take 15 grams, that can shoot you way up. So it's kind of, and then also counseling about, we train people to put in all their carbs, but if you're truly treating hypoglycemia, you don't want to put in those carbs because you're trying to raise the glucose. And I've had patients put in the carbs and then they continue to go low. So there's all these self-management. There's all these things that are still so important with the education to have success with these systems.
So it's interesting. Another colleague that I work with has said to a patient before, it's okay, you're on a system, you can train yourself. And I know it makes me nuts. And I say, absolutely not. You're going to learn the nuances and innuendos when you meet with the trainer. And it's so important to take that time, to just stop and reflect on what you're doing and how to improve all of that. And that's a big part of it. We have, you know, in the old days when we used more NPH and Ultralente, we would treat with 4 ounces of orange juice with some sugar and a half a turkey sandwich. Right. So then we back that down to, okay, now we're using more effective basal insulins. Now we're using AID, which is taking away some of that basal. It looked and saw that low coming. That's how I explain it to patients. It knows you're about to get low. So it did something about it. So you only need a little bit of food to treat the rest of it. Right. So some of the consensus paper in saying, think about what we're telling patients and what we used to tell patients, that the automated insulin delivery systems, we need to re-educate, and we need to re-educate the clinicians to re-educate the patients.
Definitely, yeah. So if it's all right with you, I want to switch gears a little bit. I want to talk about mobile apps because I had this like epiphany this morning. So first of all, I think there's a lot of interest in mobile apps. I see a lot of different companies really embracing digital health and excited about getting into the space. And I also see a lot of just total mobile app failures. And one of the things I was reflecting on is that the mobile apps where it's easy, where it's collecting data, it's doing something and the person doesn't really have to do much, those seem to be pretty successful. And the example I've long thought of is with CGM. These mobile apps, I mean, yes, you have to do the work of placing the sensor, but the mobile app is collecting the glucose data. You can look at it anytime, But then it has these alerts that you can set. And so you could choose not to look at it, but then at least you know if you go whatever the high is set for or the low, it's going to go off. You'll get alerted. But otherwise, you don't have to do so much with it. Then I was thinking, and I'm going to share a little bit of personal info because this has really got me thinking. So I recently had a baby, and this is not my first, but I have some new technology this time. And so one of them is called the Snoo, and it's this amazing bassinet that will tell me how much my baby is sleeping. And it will also tell me if the baby woke up or needs soothing. Wow, that's a really nice feature. Also, sorry if this is too much information, but there's the Willow app where it will tell you how much milk, breast milk is being collected. And you don't have to really do anything. I mean, you're doing your thing, but it's just, it's working. So of course, I love these apps. Like, I'm gonna use them constantly because they're helping me in my life with something I'm already doing anyway. But what I see is so many apps want people to do things that are not beneficial. Like you see these nutrition apps or these diabetes education apps that are very well intentioned, but like require a person to like find the foods and see the foods and record exactly and keep these logs. And people get excited about it. They're like, oh, I'll learn, this will be good. But you see it drop off after right. a couple weeks, a few weeks. People don't stay engaged. Yeah, Natalie, what's your reflection?
I 100% agree. I think when, even when we talk about, let's go backwards to that pre-bolusing to talk about what are you doing before you eat? You're cooking food. You're getting your children to a table. You're letting your dog out. You're checking your mail. You're, I don't know what you're doing, but I don't sit around and think, gee, maybe dinner will be ready in 30 minutes, right? These mobile apps need to match that. So the CGM apps need to just, they work in the background so that if I have a problem, I can send a message to my provider and say, can someone look at my CGM so that I can make some changes? I'm having lots of lows. Can someone look, or highs, or whatever the patient needs to tell us, right? It's all working in the background. Those apps that say, tell us what you ate, tell us when you ate it, tell us how many units you took. And the more they have, the patient has to engage, I feel like the quicker we fall down this hole of it's another thing that they don't want to do. And then they're overwhelmed. And then they're, because they're trying to live their lives. These people have rent and family and food and all the other things that we all have as clinicians. And I think we lose sight of that, because if they would only tell us what they were doing, if they would only do, and that's where the frustration comes in. I need these apps working without the patient. Right. And there's some that are much certainly easier to use than others. But I think that's where the disengagement happens, is the patient just, they have to live their life.
Yeah, absolutely. And another example, too, that I thought of was like my Orange Theory app. I love how it records my splat points and it somehow records the calories burned, but then it integrates into Apple Health. And so when every day I kind of get the report of how many steps I've done, calories burned and all that stuff. And I didn't really have to do anything extra. Yeah, I exercised, but I was going to exercise anyway. And it's nice having all of that data. So I kind of thought of this realizing that there's two things we need from like the ideal mobile app. One is automation, like automating as much as possible, where there's as little that we need to do. And then the second one is integration with other data sources. Apple Health is a great example, but ultimately, how can we get this integrated like into the electronic health record? We're starting to get there a little bit with glucose and CGM data, but it's a pretty slow process. And ultimately, if we had that, then the patient would benefit by also having their healthcare team involved in seeing this information and being able to really truly do remote monitoring and more readily make changes.
No, I absolutely agree. I think that's where the biggest thing, the next big hurdle comes in, is how do we get this data into an EHR so that that we can all see it? And again, with less work, not with more. So less work for the patient to get the data in the app, but also less work on our end if each of us has to do more to get it into the EHR, and I need an MA or somebody to then pull it, to get it in there, to send it to me, to, if it just came into it by pushing a button, wow, I could probably make a bigger difference with less man hours. You know, I mean, there is a, you know, how much can we each do as a clinician managing how many patients effectively and not end up burnt out from it all? You know, not right. feeling like every day I've got to look at 38 different people on top of the 20 I see one-on-one. And if more of that could become automated and our practice could become more efficient, I think that would make a huge difference as well.
Yeah, because right now we're logging into all these different systems. So few things are truly automated. It's like, yeah, okay, someone's CGM data is automatically going to the cloud and is going to their Clarity or their LibreView or Gluco or whatever. But we're, as healthcare professionals, still usually having to go to these websites and log in. And we don't have everyone on one system because we offer our patients choices, as we should. And so we're logging into a lot of different systems that take a lot of time. And that is tough in healthcare. One right. other thing I wanted to mention related to the apps, because I hope anyone who's like developing apps like listens to this. But one of the things I also have appreciated in some of my apps are message boards. So I saw this was in Noom when I tried that out. And then my What to Expect When You're Expecting app, this was available. And I really like both sets. I love message boards because people can ask questions and hear from other people real world experiences. However, usually these message boards are not monitored by a healthcare professional. And so I think this is a gap and an opportunity that there should be some type of coach, someone with training that is sort of supervising these, because what a tremendous opportunity hearing what people want feedback on, seeing directly all the questions, and then being able to provide more guided support that is accurate, because sometimes things that people answer aren't always correct. So I just think that's another tremendous opportunity out there. So I'd love to see that incorporated in future digital technology.
I love that, because again, patients make suggestions to other patients that sometimes are inaccurate, right? So I think that would really make a difference if there was a way to create a system that could help patients engage with each other, because I think that psychosocial support is so important, right? That lived experience of having diabetes and the psychological background of all of that, that, you know, some patients still don't have access to a support group. They don't have access to a CDCES. They don't have access to, so sometimes online is all they have. And then to get poor information on top of all of that is just really unfair. So I would love to see more moderated boards like that, just to encourage patients to, number one, motivate each other. I can walk 5,000 steps. I can do this. You know, I did this today before noon, right? Here's a great recipe today I found, whatever it would be, right? But also having a moderated something that would say this isn't necessarily what we would recommend, or that this isn't actually FDA approved use of this product, you know? We see all kinds of crazy out there, and that would actually help, I think, right? Just like ideas of, I put it on my cat, I did whatever, that's great, but that's not where it's approved today, right? So we want to make sure that we're kind of controlling some of that messaging.
Yeah, I actually think that would be a super fun thing to do as a CDCS. I'd love to moderate one of these things, although I'm probably already doing too many things.
Right, exactly, right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Would be really fun. And then one other thing, I think I said that was the last thing, but I have one other comment just about how do we get evidence for these mobile apps. And that's one of the things people say is, they're like, oh, well, mobile apps have no evidence. They're not studied in randomized controlled trials. There's no evidence for their use. But the thing about it, though, is the challenge with it is the fact that mobile apps change so rapidly. I mean, our technology, our smartphones are changing rapidly. If there's bugs, you're going to first offer an improved version. And so it's not really realistic to study it in a randomized controlled trial, because by the time you would do it, it would be so outdated. There'd be like 10 new versions since then.
Right.
So that's Absolutely. Where real world evidence, I think in this case, makes a lot of sense. Yeah, you collect data on people already using it. And yeah, you could say, okay, it's not as high quality as RCT, but you can collect it faster and you get that real world experience and data. So hopefully we'll see more of that because I believe mobile apps and digital technology, digital health has so much potential. We're just not always doing it right. So hopefully the future will look bright in that space.
I absolutely agree. I think that we cannot stop the process in order to get a trial done, right? We need to move. And in doing that and in improving things, I think we can do retrospective analysis. We can look at what's happening. We can say, how many patients use this app? How many started and didn't continue? But what was the average age of the person that actually did continue? Where do we find better ways to get the messaging, change the messaging? Do we change some color that makes a difference for patient engagement? I love all of that, that interactive, you know, if I turn something red versus green, which way do we go? And how do people feel about those different aspects of it, so that when we do develop apps, we can look at them better, but also looking at that data as patients engage today. How many patients are using that Orange Theory app today, for example, right? I think that's really important to move forward as we progress from the get-go, not stopping. We can't stop, not in diabetes management, not until everyone's getting to goal.
Definitely. Also, I have to use the Orange Theory app because that's how I sign up for class. So,
right. There you go. Right.
All right. Well, thanks for the great discussion, Natalie. That wraps up this episode of Diabetes Dialogue. So stay tuned for the next episode where we're going to talk all things EASD, which has been so super exciting. But that's a wrap for today. So thanks so much for joining us.
Take care.